Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. I'm Chris Bowden, joined as always by Mr. Scott King Media.
Hello, Chris.
Going by Scott King. How you doing? And we have a victory to talk about. Seems like it's been ages here as we record on Friday afternoon, but it was a good Thursday night. It was a good Thursday night before the All-Star break. Unlike facing Detroit before their previous break, at least some good feelings to go into what will be a weekend All-Star break, and hopefully those good feelings can continue next week, because who's going to be sitting there waiting? None other than the Nashville Predators. But at least it's good to get off this schneid, which was 0-3-1 in their previous four and 1-4-1 in their last six.
Yeah, it looks like they're righting the ship with this victory. Like you said, that game against Detroit 2 weeks ago is where things start to go bad, where the four-game losing streak at home starts. That wasn't pretty, and you know they're heading into the All-Star weekend here, and long breaks have not been good to this team. So we'll see. They do have some momentum. Chris, I think things were building in a positive direction. That Maple Leafs game was kind of a deciding game to me. Then you see them win last night. You see Minnesota and Colorado lose. And all of a sudden, they're just 4 points behind those guys.
Yeah, got a little help last night with, Dallas losing at home to Toronto 24 hours after Toronto came in and beat the Hawks in overtime. Colorado, after their 10-game winning streak, now has lost two in a row, including Thursday night in St. Louis against the Blues. And then Minnesota also, they really got swamped, skunked the other night to the Penguins in Pittsburgh, falling behind 6-0 before they made things respectable 6-3. And of course, the highlight on Thursday night, just days after, I was the one who brought up the question to Joe Quenneville at one of the practices or one of the morning skates. How is Alex DeBrincat going through the dog days of the NHL season that every veteran feels when we get into December and January and into February? DeBrincat, before Thursday night in his previous 9 game, had just one goal and one assist. And Joel actually said, yeah, we saw a lot from him in the first 20 or 25 games. He is going through a little bit of a lull right now that every player goes through, whether they're 20 years old or not. But then on Thursday night, what does he do? He comes through with the hat trick, and Joel has a whole different tone to him.
You know, when he has the puck, he's got tremendous play recognition. He's got a deceptive shot. And, you know, the puck seems to hang around him a little bit. And, you know, I think that he had a stretch first half of the year. He seemed like he had a lot more. And then tonight, that was kind of what we saw earlier on in the year. And when he has it a lot more, it's things develop.
Yeah, it was good to see DeBrincat get off the schneid, so to speak. So Joel kind of reflecting on what he was telling us earlier in the week about that little lull in his play. But now on this line that Joel has put together with DeBrincat on one side, Anthony Duclair on the other, Jonathan Toews in the middle, they looked good, even though they weren't rewarded on Wednesday night against Toronto in the overtime loss. And then it all paid off in Thursday's game against Detroit as Toews and Duclair and DeBrincat were all +4, and Jordan Osterley as well.
I think they're fantastic last night. I think Alex DeBrincat gets a lot of confidence when he gets a top six role. When he gets to that first line, I think that gives a kid confidence, especially playing in front of the hometown. He had a bunch of family and friends there last night. I almost was going to, put it out there on Twitter that he was going to have a huge game, and I decided against it in case.
Now you say it.
Yeah, I play Friday morning
hindsight
quarterback with hockey here.
Hindsight Twitter.
No, that's great to see, and Joel was right, and finally, I guess, Chris, how much you said before that Joel's been very patient with the young guys and the old guys who haven't been performing well. How much, though, is that decision where you get a skilled guy like that in a rebuilding year? Should he have just been playing in a role on a top line or on the second line? Should he have been there a lot more this season? Why would you bury that kind of talent in the bottom six?
Well, I think that's kind of part of the equation here in why he may have been a little bit quieter over the last few weeks, because he did get that opportunity back in late November, early December, I want to say, and then things get off the rails from a team standpoint, so you try and mix things up. Let's also keep in mind that all this time, Joel's trying to get Richard Panik going, and that never happened. Trying to get Patrick Sharp going, although Sharp largely has been on some of the lower lines, doing the same things with Brandon Saad. You have have to keep Nick Schmaltz almost somewhere on those top two lines. So Joel's been trying to push a lot of buttons and being very patient with some of these guys that he is relying on, both young and a little bit more veteran-like. And I think from that standpoint, hoping some of these guys can take the bull by the horns and lead the way, they've been unable to do so on a consistent basis. So why not put the kid back up there with another speed guy on the other side of Jonathan Toews? And granted, come Tuesday night, if things do not work out well in Nashville, it's going to be the complete opposite. We're going to be right back where we started before the game against
Denver. And I won't say anything on Twitter because everything's up for grabs.
Right. Just look at the two Detroit games, though. I mean, this is kind of...
Night and day.
This is kind of what the Blackhawks season has been. The game here at the United Center before their bye week, their five-day break, when they were totally flat and looked embarrassing, and then the inspiration and positive vibes people feel from Thursday night's victory in Detroit, that goes a long way. And let's go back to Joel, because I also talked to him last week, asked him about whether he really necessarily enjoys all this line juggling. There are some people who think he goes out of his way to do it and pulls a trigger too quickly, whereas I've been saying all along he's been real patient so far this season. And just the way the season has gone, Joel told us it's kind of necessary as he tries to find the right buttons to push in order to get some consistent production here.
Whether it's opportunity, whether it's changes, or a lot of them, I mean, it's a some of them go in games and then you go off of that. But that's, we don't like changing. Believe me, it's not the recipe, and it's not what we're looking to do. We want to make sure that there's more predictable starts to our game, more predictable efforts, and that consistency is what we're looking to establish. But it's been, can't say that that's been in place, and that's why you're probably seeing so much change.
Yeah, I think it's been a frustrating year for Joel from that standpoint, and his reputation is that he does push the buttons on the line blender pretty quickly. But this all ties into how the team is doing, and when you look at this club that before the last six games prior to the win in Detroit, they scored 28 goals in a 1-6 game stretch. The next six games, when they went 1-4-1, all of 8 goals. And then they come back on Thursday night and score 5. It's just been that kind of Jekyll and Hyde season. And it also ties in with some of the veteran play, too. When you look at Jonathan Toews, he went through a 5-game stretch a couple of weeks ago where he had 9 points. And now, on Thursday night, came his first point in 7 games, including Thursday night's game. Same for Brandon Saad. I have 5 points in a 4-game stretch, and then in the last 7, he's had 0 points. So that's kind of indicative as to how this team season has gone so far. And when it comes to Thursday night's game, and one of the topics that we kicked around here is what worked Thursday night that didn't work during the homestand. And I think part of that is they got a good starts in a couple of those games, especially to finish off the homestand against Tampa Bay and Toronto. Got good starts, but weren't necessarily rewarded as much as they probably should have been. And when other teams this year have been hanging around games, all of a sudden a little bit of doubt starts to creep into, let's be honest, it's been kind of a mentally fragile team this year with the way the season has gone. Last night, or I should say Thursday night, depending on when you're listening to this in Detroit, they got rewarded about 3 minutes in, got rewarded 2.5 minutes later, and then a third goal after that. It's kind of what happened in Ottawa. That's not going to happen all the time, yeah. But I think that production spawned a little bit more belief and a little bit more energy in this team.
Well, at the morning skate, Joel Quenneville was asked about Duncan Keith, how he's been this year, and if you're no stranger to Q-speak like we are, Chris, you know that when he says he's been okay,
right,
that says a lot. Mm-hmm. That says he needs to be better. And then also maybe there's some truth to players do read what the media says or follow along on Twitter, even guys like Duncan Keith, because I thought he set the tone of the game last night. I think, Duclair was amazing. They scored on three consecutive Anthony Duclair shifts. Their Brinkett, obviously huge with the hat trick, but it all starts with that hit that Duncan Keith laid out. Opening, what was it?
First shift, 20,
yeah. Yes, first,
right
first shift,
ice.
Seconds into the game. And that's not how he plays usually.
Right.
I don't know if it's laying out some frustration or just wanting to set the tone and make his presence known, but I thought that was a huge play by him. And I think Quenneville, you talk about pushing buttons on a blender. I think the patience, like we keep saying, or just the decision to give Anthony Duclair a lot of responsibility when he first gets to Chicago, puts him on that first line pretty quickly and keeps him there, puts him on a top power play unit. I think that gave him a lot of confidence. I think you're starting to see his hands go a lot now. He was he had 3 points last night plus four. His first goal as a Hawk. I think he's flying, and you know, Taves also plus four. I think you just need to see him start scoring now, and that top line is really going to be a force to be reckoned with.
It's one of those change of scenery trades that San Bowman pulled off, and he gained a couple of years in terms of age. He gained some salary cap space, and let's be honest. I mean, if Anthony Duclair is all that,
and a bag of chips.
His original team, the New York Rangers, yeah, maybe a little dip too. His original team, the New York Rangers, would have kept him. And I know he was involved in the trade with some principals that the Rangers wanted in return. So that was part of the equation. And inconsistency, grumbling a little bit in Arizona after a 20-goal season 2 years ago. And, you know, the biggest rap on him coming over is defensive responsibility. And that's an area of his game he is going to have to pick up here, no matter how many goals he scores, if you're going to play for Joel Quenneville. So this opportunity has presented itself for Anthony Duclair. He rewarded the Blackhawks last night, but at the same token, you know, he's going to have to show progress. You know, unless he suddenly becomes a 40-goal scorer, he's going to have to show progress at the other end of things, and that's still at 22 years old, I think something that Stan and Joel and this coaching staff believe they can get out of this guy.
Another good thing from last night, I think, yeah, top line looked amazing. Hopefully they can build on that. And when you have your top line playing well and producing, setting a table, it's great to have the fourth line going. Finally, you see Vinny Hinostroza get a goal again. I think that's probably really big for his confidence. Another guy who is always flying, one of the fastest guys on the team, obviously. So you see him get rewarded there. And it's good to have that depth scoring, and maybe they can get to a point where every line builds confidence. They can get four lines rolling.
Yeah, and who to thunk with last night's game, they win it 5-1. You don't hear a peep on the score sheet out of Patrick Kane at all.
Yeah.
Or Nick Schmaltz, who has been on an offensive roll at least a lot lately. There was one, you know, sore thumb sticking out over the past couple weeks in Schmaltz's performance, and like everybody else, that was in the Detroit game at the United Center. But other than that, you know, he's been picking up his game as well. And, you know, it's all kind of sort of this process that the Blackhawks are living in right now in terms of turning over the roster on the fly, even doing it heading into the season, but even more so now during the season where, okay, this isn't working out. Patrick Sharp, you know, we gave him a one-year deal. We were hoping to see more production than he's given us so far. We weren't quite expecting Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook not to give us as much production as we spent, so we're going to have to, you know, try and mix and match things another way, try and find a way to fix the overall picture. And part of that is bringing some of these young players along, and the Osterleys have come along.
How about his minutes? He has the most minutes on the team. This kid, incredibly new to the team, just out of college, right?
Reliable. Actually, he went to Western Michigan. I had a chance to visit with him at the morning skate on, I'm getting my days, Wednesday.
Yeah.
We aired it on the Wednesday post-game show, whereas he was at Western Michigan. He went undrafted during his late teenage year, so he decides to enroll in Western Michigan. Western Michigan has a coaching change to Andy Murray, a longtime NHL coach, who puts a very NHL-centric program in at Western Michigan. All of a sudden, Jordan's head is spinning his first couple years over there, but it taught him to adapt. And by the time he was finished up as a Bronco there, following in the footsteps of a couple of Red Wings and Danny DeKeyser and Luke Witkowski, by the way, all of a sudden, he caught the eye of several NHL clubs, Edmonton being among them. And even though he couldn't stick at Edmonton, get any consistent playing time there, he told me about how valuable that AHL time was for him. And that's kind of what we're getting to here in terms of the Blackhawks, with working these young players in and finding a way to, you know, grow up quickly at the NHL level. And I know we're in a we-want-it-now society, and the Blackhawk fans are spoiled by what they've been given over the course of the past 7 or 8 years. But at some point, there has been time to turn this roster over, and that's kind of the thing, the area that the Blackhawks are caught in right now. You're just hoping the mix of the veterans, hoping to pick up their game, and the youngsters growing theirs as we go along, can result in the type of win streak that so many of these other teams have had so far this season and have put the Blackhawks in the position that they're in right now.
A correction, Osterley is 25, my mistake.
Yep. No, yeah, he's
not too far removed from college, but certainly looks like a young man out there. I want to talk about the goaltending real quick too. Forsberg, too bad he couldn't get the shutout last night. They win 4-1. But I thought he looked really good. I thought he was seeing pucks, so I was tracking him really well. I thought he was very good positionally. And you look at how Glass has come along, and he's kind of getting the majority of the starts now. Before, I wouldn't have thought I would say this, but if you get the rest of the team going, if you get the young guys adapting to the NHL at the latter part of the season here, and you have the veterans playing the way they should, the way we've been accustomed to them playing, I think the goaltending is good enough, either one of those guys, or can be, to help them make a push here and maybe even do well in the playoffs.
That's what Joel has said all along here through this entire process. And I think maybe there are two or three games you can point to, two involving Forsberg, the one in Vancouver to start this whole thing off after Corey Crawford went on injured reserve. That was ugly, but let's face it, he didn't get a goaltender's look even worse when they're not getting play around them. And the Blackhawks overall play that game in Vancouver right after Christmas. They'll get a chance to avenge that coming up in the next week when they return there after Nashville. And then the game against the Islanders coming out of the bye. There are some who criticized Glass for the way he looked in that Detroit game. I thought that was an overall failure, you know, 1-20 in the lineup.
After a performance like that and people are critical of the goalie, you can't, even if the goalie has a great game, you're not going to win 0-0.
The ones that stand out to all the critics are, Forsberg had a stinker against the Islanders in terms of that one goal where he lost sight of it. He's kicking it around in the crease. All of a sudden, it's in the net. And he may have had one of those. But sandwiched in between there, he had three real solid starts. And then I like the way also these guys have bounced back. Now, let's tap the brakes a little bit. These guys aren't Corey Crawford. But as Joel and we're saying here, they should be good enough for the Blackhawks if the play around them is good enough. And I've liked the way these guys have responded when they've had so-so efforts. Forsberg, after that Islanders game, didn't get another opportunity until the Thursday game in Detroit. Granted, he had a couple of pucks hit the iron behind him, but as I said in the post game on Thursday night, it's about time the Blackhawks got some of that luck in return, because how many irons and posted crossbars have they hit so far this year? But outside of that, he made some key saves along the course of it, and I like the way each of them has stepped up. Glass the same way in responding with a couple of solid starts against Tampa Bay and Toronto a little bit earlier in the week in those back-to-back games.
Yeah, I think the tough part is not just that those guys don't always get the effort they should out of the rest of the team in front of them, but they're coming into a real tough situation having to try to replace Corey Crawford, who if he was healthy, hopefully you'd agree, Chris, that he definitely had a chance at a Vezina. He looked like the best goalie in the league a lot of the time.
No question about it. And some of the heroics that he's had earlier in the season weren't good enough for the Blackhawks to come away with 2 points in some of them. And there were some cases that he is the reason they came away with 2 points. But by and large, these guys are backups. They're not number one goalies. So, that's where they are right now. They're hoping to turn their games into something that, eventually became what Antti Raanta was. And Scott Darling, who's a whole other story this year in Carolina. I feel bad for Scott with the way things have transpired.
Yeah, he's a great guy. You have to feel bad
for him. Yeah, and now all of a sudden, they've got people in Carolina saying, this is a failure, get rid of the guy. Cam Ward's kind of taken over the net there. But, and the good news is, from what we understand, Corey Crawford's at least planning, barring any setbacks, planning to at least travel with the Blackhawks, get that part of what he was reportedly dealing with, that part of it through, making sure he can resume the travel aspect of things, and then get back on the ice and not have any repercussions of anything there, and get himself back in shape. And here's the other thing to remember, though. Once Corey Crawford, if and when Corey Crawford does come back, and when he does come back, let's keep in mind, we shouldn't necessarily expect him to be the Corey Crawford that we saw right off the bat for most of the season prior to his injury. Got to give this guy a little slack in order to come back. The hope is, knock on wood, he just picks up where he left off. But, that may not be very realistic here.
Yeah, anytime you're out, any position player, anytime you're out for a long period of time, it takes you a long time. Not a long time. It's going to take you a few games to find your groove again. And I think that goes double for what was reported as a head injury could be even more tough to get back.
Yes, especially at that goalie position when vision and reaction and, you know, recovery are so crucial. Getting that type of game action, you know, practice, you know, you can do all you want in practice, but when things are flying in game action is going to be the real true test. And, you know, hopefully Corey comes back soon, and I'm real curious to see, you know, how sharp he is once he comes back off the bench, because, you know, I think Blackhawk fans should at least expect there's going to be a little rust he's going to have to knock out.
A couple
there.
Games at least. I think he's supposed to skate this weekend during the All-Star break.
Yeah, give it a shot there.
And then Hugh's going to determine if he travels or not.
Yeah. We were talking a minute ago. I wanted to get to a bite of sound that we had from Mike Babcock when he came in here with Toronto earlier in the week. We were talking about the process of working younger players into a lineup here. And he's gone through this in Detroit after their heyday with all those stars and two straight Stanley Cup appearances, winning one of them, but then having a team that started to get older and started to become less dominant at the hands of the Blackhawks, by the way. He was in Detroit for several years after that as they tried to rebuild and try and, you know, get their mojo back to where they could hang with the Blackhawks, at least while they were in the Central Division. Did a decent job of it, especially in that second round series in 2013 in terms of being competitive. But then when his contract was up, he went to Toronto and facing pretty much a full rebuild there with a couple of talented young core players, having to rebuild with some of those young players. And I asked him about what the Blackhawks are going through right now and bringing some of these guys who are doing really well at the AHL level, and all of a sudden they get at the NHL level. A lot of people, fans and media, expect them to just pick up where they left off, and how rare that is. And Mike Babcock seemed to confirm that.
Bring them up and you say, who is this guy? It takes them 2, maybe 3 years to get back to being what they're capable of being. You just got to hope they're not on someone else's team when that happens. You got to get them to that light at the end of the tunnel quicker, if that makes any sense. Well, I remember coming here when I was first with Detroit, and we were just flat out better than the Hawks, and then we had real good series for a bit, and then they got better than us. And that's just the process in the league, and they've been lucky because their guys were so good, so young. Daves and Kane still aren't that old. Well, most teams, you don't get like that till you're 28, and then she's over fast. So that's just the process, is working those guys in. The more depth you have, the better coach you are. That's just the facts.
I love him. Giving a little vote of confidence there to Joel Quenneville, and anybody thinking, you know, that Joel's tenure here may be up if things don't go well the rest of the year. That remains to be seen. But I love listening to Mike Babcock. You know, Blackhawk fans may hate him because he used to be a Red Wings coach and associated with that. But every time he speaks, every once in a while, he'll get a little salty with you. But he'll speak his mind. And most of it's really interesting like that. And providing a little insight into, you know, hey, you can't expect these kids who are stars in the AHL to all of a sudden light it up at the NHL level. Sometimes they do, but by and large, it's going to take some time, and it's going to take the word that a lot of people don't want to hear is patience. And I love it when he said, you know, hopefully when the light goes on for these guys, it may take 2 or 3 years, but the light doesn't go on for an opposing team when you're playing them. I just love hearing what Mike Babcock had to say there.
No, it's funny. I wasn't actually aware of that quote. I asked him a similar question after the game. I saw him about patience with a younger player and how you have to maintain that, and how Q's done it with the Hawks. And he gave me a great answer. And one of the first things he said is comparing Taves to Matthews, that Taves was on Matthews all night, and mm-hmm. Taves had the puck all night, and you know how quickly Matthews adapted to the NHL and how well he's done. So I thought that was a great example, and give me a good quote, not too salty with me, but a very, very interesting comparison there and words on younger players.
And the thing to keep in mind, you know, I'm not trying to provide any excuses, because the first part of the podcast, you know, we were pretty fair in bringing up some of the numbers that aren't necessarily very attractive with some of these veteran players. But the other thing to keep in mind, especially concerning Jonathan Taves, is he gets that number one defensive assignment. Now, granted, years past, he was getting that number one defensive assignment and also scoring 30 goals a year.
And I think that's what people realize is missing. What was he, 69% on the dot last night, too? I mean, that's not dipping at all either, and that's very important.
Yeah. Does that mean that's what you want only out of a $10.5 million a year player? No.
Who's your captain?
And I'm sure you know, this is weighing, like we were talking before coming in here in the podcast, I'm sure this is weighing on Jonathan personally. He'll never show it. But since he's come here to town, we know Captain Sirius and how seriously he takes these things and about his responsibility within the group, especially wearing the C. He knows it as much as anybody that production has been down. Now it's a matter of seeing if he can unlock that once again, trying to find a way to do that. He's done it for 5-6 game stretches this season where, okay, we think he's back, and then it goes away all of a sudden. But one thing that's been consistent is the defensive responsibility. Auston Matthews was fairly quiet throughout that game on Wednesday night, except for maybe the last couple of minutes in regulation. I can't remember whether I was downstairs at that point watching on television and getting ready for the postgame show. I kept hearing Matthews' name called more frequently than earlier in the game in the last 2 or 3 minutes of that contest where he had some really dead-to-right chances there. I'm not sure if Jonathan was on the ice at that time, but other than that, you didn't hear Matthew's name called a whole lot there on Wednesday night.
No. Do you think Taves is the guy who needs to perform well out of the veterans that are underperforming, Chris? Or do you think it's defensive core guys like Keith and Seabrook? Because offensively, you do have Kane, and you have Schmaltz stepping up, and the first line is looking good even when Taves isn't scoring now these last couple games. So who do you think out of the vets that need to play better is maybe the most disappointing or really have to show up, if you had to pick one guy?
All of them.
That certainly would help.
Here, I did a little numbers crunching last night, too. When Brandon Saad scores a goal this year, Blackhawks 9-1-1. When Jonathan Taves scores a goal this year, a little less, 7-4-2. But having those guys, and now they're split up, but having those guys produce, and I think Joel's reached the point where he's had them together all season long. It still isn't working, so it's time to try something different. As now he puts Saad on the line with Schmaltz and Kane. So they all really are going to have to find a way to put all this on the young kids and cross your fingers that Corey Crawford is going to be the Corey Crawford from October, November, and early December is going to be unrealistic in terms of...
It's a long shot.
Trying to string together the kind of streaks that Dallas has gone on, that Colorado has gone on so far this year, and any other number of teams have. It's going to take the guys with the letters on their jerseys to really start pulling in that right direction.
Mentioned Saad first in your numbers there. That's, for me, I guess I just kind of forgot because I didn't mention him, but for me, that's who I've looked to do more all season, and I'm not sure why he hasn't. But you know what? I do like that line, though. Saad, Schmaltz, Kane, I like that line a lot. Saad, had a lot of success playing with Kane back in the day, and hopefully that gets him going again.
I was talking to Mr. Kane after the morning skate a couple of days ago, and I think it was brought up. Taves was missing from a practice, I think on Tuesday it was. So Joel put Saad on a line with Kane and Schmaltz, and we just thought, okay, maybe that's just because Jonathan was taking a rest day. But Joel was asked, is this something you could potentially consider? He says, yeah, I am. And then when I was talking to Mr. Kane afterward, I'm not trying to drop names anyway, but because he jarred this in me, and I want to give him credit, is that during the playoff run in 2015, there was a stretch where Saad was centering for Kane and Andrew Shaw, and that was a real effective line back in the 2015 playoff run for a good stretch there.
Yeah, worked out okay.
Yeah, it did. So I know there was one other order of business that we want to get to, and at that Toronto game, you had a chance to talk to the legendary voice, right?
I did.
Yeah.
The TV voice of the NHL, Doc Emrick. He was awesome. You know, we get to do a lot of cool things covering this team and what we do, and that was certainly one for me. He couldn't have been nicer. He made time for me and pretty much everyone that tries to talk to him, as he does before every game. He's just a great guy. I appreciate his time. Here's some of the stuff from him.
The decision will have to be made in the next 4 weeks as to whether this roster is going to be together after the trade deadline. My guess is it's not. My guess is that Stan Bowman is going to make some moves sometime, because the fans have seen better, and if they turn the clock back another 10 to 15 years, they've seen worse. But the more recent fans that have been won by the Blackhawks since the Rocky Words John McDonough era came about don't pay attention to what was there before. They know now, and they know now that this is probably the poorest of the teams over those 10 years, that's in the basement, that hasn't performed well. And that looks slower than the other teams that they're playing against. So strikes me that we're going to probably see some changes made if it doesn't get better.
How remarkable has your often partner still, Eddie Olczyk, done considering circumstances this year?
He's an inspiration to all of us whenever he comes in and works. And the fact that he is now 10 treatments in, 2 to go, and by the end of February, God willing, he'll have a clear scan and he'll be back working games. And when he comes in here, he's so charged up that he inspires the rest of us. And if he comes in with what he deals with that we don't see at home in recovering from chemotherapy, how can we be anything other than 110% when he comes in and does what he does? So he makes all of us better.
Unbelievable. Yeah, Eddie, to put it in horse racing parlance, down the stretch he comes.
Yep.
With his cancer treatments, just 2 more to go. And yeah, he has been a picture and a provider of strength just by showing up and going to work. And as Pat Foley has said when talking about Eddie, this has been his carrot, being able in that second week between treatments to be able to come in and do his work, whether it's, you know, in Connecticut for the national broadcast in the studio or being, you know, on the local broadcast or national broadcast involving the Blackhawks. He's truly, truly been an inspiration. And we heard from another interview with Eddie earlier in the week how he has inspired others to go out and he has had a direct impact on someone getting checked when they normally wouldn't have, and all of a sudden finding something in time. And understandably, he got real emotional through that.
Yeah, that was a great story that came out of that. Literally saved someone's life with the way he's been handling things.
And in terms of what the other thing that Doc was talking about here before we head down the home stretch here ourselves, yeah, I think these next 3 weeks are going to be crucial. Trade deadline, February 26th. Now, overall, of these last 33 games, 25 are coming against the West. But when you come back, it's Nashville on Tuesday, and then you fly out to Vancouver and Calgary. Vancouver's out of the race here, but they embarrassed the Blackhawks in that first meeting right after Christmas, the first game that Forsberg was given the goalie reins. Then at Calgary, which was red hot and has slowed down of late. Then they come home to face the Flames again, get Dallas, whom the Blackhawks haven't proven they can beat yet so far this year, and then traveling to Minnesota. And then with that trip continues with Arizona and Vegas, and then coming back home to take on the Anaheim Ducks. So I think that sequence in particular, which is about a week or so, week and a half before the trade deadline, is going to be, you know, very impactful in terms of what Stan Bowman's thinking here, how to proceed moving forward.
He might do something. He might feel the need to do something. So
add or subtract, though.
Ooh.
As I'm saying, I think these next 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, yeah, there may be one particular name, I don't know, between how tied up they are with contracts and, you know, so many teams being in the race and not wanting to do the Blackhawks any particular favors in terms of wanting to stay in the race themselves based on what they've accomplished over the last few years. But, there could be one or two veteran names who make sense to move along if you decide, okay, let's reboot here. Let's get Tanner Caro up, John Hayden up, get Dylan Sakura here once his college team is over, and get them some NHL experience and move on toward next year. That has never been the attitude of this management. It's always been, our foot is always on the gas pedal.
Yeah.
But if these next 2 or 3 weeks turned out to be another rough patch where it's going to be a virtually impossible hill to climb, I think it's going to be a different attitude here at the trade deadline for
Stan. So if he wants to add something, you think he peels off a veteran or two? You think that the young guys who are in Rockford that teams would be interested in, the Hawks should just be getting minutes, whether it's in the AHL or bring back to the NHL?
Well, what I'm saying is, if he decides to trade a veteran or two off the current roster, the thinking would be it's a sell-off. It would be to help these other contenders to get a pick or a prospect in return. If, you know, the cold, hard decision is to go forward doing that, then, yeah, for the last 6 weeks of the season, yeah, you'll see some of these young guys up here. If this is going to be a concession that, okay, this hill's going to be a little bit too steep to climb. We put ourselves in this situation this year with the play, but it's going to be too steep to climb, and we'll have to reboot for next year. So, yeah, then you're going to see, okay, you bring the Haydens and the Forslings and the Caros back up, and you see what Dylan Sakura, once, if and when you sign him, can do here over the course of a month of an NHL season with all the hoopla that he has. It may come down to that. I think the Blackhawk fans, everybody's hoping this team will start clicking and they don't have to do that. But I think the cold reality of the situation is if they're buried, they go into the break, 4 points behind the wild card, you know, you got to find a way to get yourself on a hot streak here and cross your fingers that some of these other teams come back to the pack a little bit too.
We'll see you after the All-Star break.
We will.
Patrick Kane participating in the festivities there.
Patrick Kane and the training staff, too. Kudos to those guys. Mike Gapski and Jeff Thomas are being
sent
down there. Yeah.
That's great.
So he's got a little bit of company down there.
There you go.
I wonder if Kane will even hang with them very much, though, down in Tampa.
He's got to go buy that Superman cape and some glasses.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of...
breakaway challenge.
What kind of tricks he pulls out of his bag here for all the Saturday night stuff. And the Sunday All-Star game has been fun to watch, too.
It is fun. Three-on-three is great.
It's constant overtime. Would I want to be out there skating like that, three-on-three, for however many minutes?
If John Scott can do it, you can do it, Chris.
No, thank you.
You can do it, too.
Any final thoughts? Are we wrapping?
You know what? If people want to hear more or read more of my Doc Emrick interview, it is a blog on WGNRadio.com, and it's also on my Twitter and Facebook.
And follow along on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page at facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy for everything Hawks, including Scott's Chelsea Blogger blog. And follow me and Scott on Twitter. I'm at BowdenTweets, and Scott's at Scott King Media. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. So we'll see what the All-Star break brings. Really anxious to see how the Blackhawks respond after the big victory in Detroit and see if they can sustain that against the team that's really been their bugaboo here over the course of the past year. They start things off in Nashville. Scott, thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
All right. I'm Chris Sullivan signing off. We thank Joe Romano for producing the show.
Not our bugaboo. Big help.
Not at all. Big help
around here.
Couldn't do it without him. And to all of you for listening, we'll see you next time here on the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast.